I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Dave and Degenovic, a new conversation.
All right, here we go.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Israeli warplanes have launched massive airstrikes in Gaza today, resulting in one of the most serious conflicts in years. And this has been going on for the past week. Dozens of Israeli jets bombed more than 9 miles of Hamas tunnel systems in the Gaza area. Here's the latest from ABC News.
Israeli artillery and airstrikes battering Gaza. Dozens of buildings have been flattened. Palestinian authorities say at least 26 have been killed in overnight strikes, 8 of them children. But an attack on one particular block tower is drawing international condemnation. Al Jazeera broadcasting live as the tower fell, the building also housing multiple international media, including the Associated Press. The media outlets say they were given just an hour to get out. Israel has claimed the high-rise building housed Hamas military targets, but provided no evidence for that.
Mary Richards is filling in for Debbie Dujanovic today. And Mary, as you watch this video, and this unfolds in real time, it's horrifying, the devastation and the firepower.
You know, it's been horrifying to watch all of this whole week. The rocket attacks against Israel, everything that's going on over there, really, I think, should make Americans feel unsettled and nervous. I wanted to read this tweet that just came through from Representative John Curtis. He said, "Proud to have joined with colleagues in introducing a resolution condemning the rocket attacks against Israel by Hamas, calling them out for their horrendous use of human shields, and restating my steadfast position that Israel has an undeniable right to exist." So we have Boyd Matheson with us here. And Boyd, I'm just thinking about, as I watch this happening over there, this isn't just an over there. Where does our country, where does Congress, where does the U.S. fit in all of this discussion?
Yeah, this is a complicated, Dave and I were talking during the break, this is not only complicated, this is centuries old and not going anywhere anytime soon. So it is incredibly complex and hard to figure out where everything goes. To me, the most important things as it relates to Congress is that Congress does its job. So if there is anything that needs to be done militarily, they need to make sure they're going through the committees, they're having votes so that the public knows what are we doing, why are we doing it, when are we doing it, and so on. Otherwise, we end up with a lot of these convoluted things that just create more division for us at home and doesn't send the right signals to our allies and, frankly, to our enemies around the world.
It's hard to comprehend exactly what's going on because we watch these videos. And, for example, when these rockets that Hamas has shot in to Israel, you see them coming in. And then Israel has what's called the Iron Dome, which is essentially an anti-rocket rockets. Basically, they shoot rockets at rockets and they try to shoot them down out of the sky. And you watch this unfold. And it is just incomprehensible the amount of firepower that is coming in, that is going out to stop these rockets from hitting civilians.
Yeah, and all of that is just extraordinary technology. A lot of that's got to be U.S. technology and in partnership with the Israelis. And I think going back to John Curtis's point in terms of, you know, I think there's a central component to this, which is Israel has a right to exist. That's an important element to this, which actually ties us all the way back to what happened last night with the etching in the glass of the swastika, because that is you need to be annihilated, you need to be taken out and removed from the face of the earth. So there is an interesting element of all of that. Of course, Israel has been a longtime ally of the United States, and I think a lot of members of Congress on both sides of the political aisle, by the way, are standing up and showing that support for Israel. But as I said, this is such a complicated area of the world, so hard for us to really grasp and understand. But it is an opportunity, I think, for the Biden administration to lead. And I think it's going to be very complicated for the Biden administration because they have been working so hard to re-engage Iran in the nuclear deal. That is suddenly creating a lot of complexities and a lot of uncomfortable conversations as it relates to having a conversation with Israel.
Yeah. And you mentioned the White House and their whole role in this. We heard from ABC News White House correspondent Karen Travers this morning on Utah's Morning News about what the White House is working on to ease this issue in the Middle East.
You know, a lot of conversations, a lot of behind-the-scenes diplomacy. That's what we've been seeing from the president, the secretary of state, and other top officials over the past week or so. You know, going back to last Wednesday when the president had his first phone call with the Israeli prime minister, Benjamin Netanyahu. And he told me that day in response to a question that, you know, Israel has a right to defend itself when it's facing rocket attacks.
Now, Boyd, as you said, this is centuries long, this conflict. But what spun up this one in particular? Well, on April 13th, Israeli police raided a mosque, one of the holiest sites in Islam. This is one of several actions that led to the sudden resumption of war that increased this conflict between Israel and Hamas. And it seems like there's always an excuse, like from one side or the other, there's always something that's instigated it.
Yeah. And I think there's some interesting nuances to this as well. This is, you know, there's been different rocket launches in and out and airstrikes and so on. But this one's interesting in that it is spilling over into the streets, that there is, you know, more of this face-to-face confrontation, which they haven't had for quite some time. I think it's also really interesting to note as you look at the differences there and where these sides are coming from in this argument, there is always an excuse. And it's one of the fascinating things to me is in Israel right now, you don't have a formed government. So remember, they've had several elections. No one has been able, because they have 101 different political parties, no one has been able to get a governing coalition. So Benjamin Netanyahu is basically an acting prime minister because he couldn't form a government. His opposition has not been successful either. I think they have two more weeks maybe to try to form a coalition that gets them to a governing space. So not only do you have all of this conflict going on, you have a lot of different interests. Benjamin Netanyahu clearly benefits in terms of trying to form a coalition or a government in the midst of war, being very hawkish and very strong on those kinds of things. So it changes a lot of dynamics. Again, having a kind of an interim government during all of this makes it even more complicated, both for the White House and I think for the rest of the world.
Well, President Trump was very pro-Israel. Had sent very strong messages, the U.S. Embassy being placed in Jerusalem. All of this was a very strong and, quite frankly, probably an overdue symbol of support. What does President Biden do to not inflame the situation, but show the appropriate amount of support?
Yeah, I think, as was mentioned, as Mary mentioned, that a lot of this is behind the scenes, a lot of negotiating, a lot of let's just get both sides to exhale for a minute, because often in this kind of back and forth, that's what you want. If you can break the cycle or break the momentum of escalation, that's often what you're trying to do. So my guess is between the State Department, between the White House, they're just trying to get both sides somehow to just exhale for a moment so they can break that escalation cycle.
Makes sense. And coming up next, we'll be speaking, going over to Israel to speak live with Amos Giora. We've had him on. He's been on your show, Boyd.
Yeah.
He's a great resource for us, a University of Utah law professor who lives over there, and to get his thoughts about this. Because like you said, Boyd, I mean, I my brain probably immediately jumps to all crossing all the bridges before we even reached them. But I think, great, World War III, here it comes.
Just slow it down.
So
deep
I like
breath.
That. Yes, for sure.
Somebody needs to exhale.
Yes.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Dave and Dejanovic.
As we've been reporting all morning, Israeli warplanes have launched massive airstrikes in Gaza today against Hamas, resulting in one of the most serious conflicts in years, as this has been going on for the better part of the past week. Mary Richards is filling in for Debbie Dujanovic today. And Mary, as you watch the video and we're seeing it unfold, we're seeing the devastation of these bombings. We've seen the night attacks as rockets are passing and exploding in the air. It's been terrifying.
It really has, just because of, as Boyd was telling us in the last segment, about just the historical nature of these conflicts, how this has been going on for so long, and then the worry about this very region and what that means for the rest of the world. There are so many good things we can learn from Amos Giora, who is a professor of law at the University of Utah, but he has a home in Israel, and he joins us now live on the KSL Newsline. Tell us more about what you are experiencing there in this past week, and what's going on today?
First of all, thanks for having me. I think this conversation needs to be divided into two distinct yet interlocking parts. Part one is the conflict between Hamas and Israel, exactly as you said at the beginning of your show, the rockets coming into Israel, the Israeli Air Force responding by bombing various targets in Hamas. That's part one. Part two, and frankly, far more distressing, and in my opinion, far more important, is the, for lack of a better word, is the rioting that has taken place in Israel in the last 5 days between Jews and Arabs. We've never had that since the state was created in 1948. And this is a place of coexistence. 20% of Israelis are Israeli Arabs. And we have mixed towns, which is where Arabs and Jews live together. Prominent ones would be Jaffa, which is right next to Tel Aviv. There are others. And the riots, for lack of a better term, that have broken out have been violent, very violent. And from my perspective, more distressing and in many ways far more important than the conflict between Hamas and Israel.
Professor Giora teaches at the University of Utah. Why are you in Israel right now?
I live here. I commute between the U and the we live outside Jerusalem, and I lead a commuting existence. In pre-COVID days, I flew, I think, 250,000 miles a year. Obviously, COVID impacts it, but I genuinely lead. Some people commute from Sandy to Salt Lake City. I commute from Jerusalem to Salt Lake City.
And we are so grateful to have your expertise on this because of that very experience you have being a commuter. I am so struck by what you said, because I feel like what I'm seeing in the media and the news reports in general, in the quick headline versions on our TV stations, are this is happening. They say this, and I don't know what to believe. But that point about what's happening in the street, why is that so much more concerning to you to see this? These relationships seems like break apart, neighbor and neighbor.
That's exactly what it is. So what's relevant to our conversation, if I may, is I served for 20 years in Israel before coming to the U. I served for 20 years in Israel Defense Forces. And I held two posts that are directly related to our conversation. One is for 3 years, I was the Israel Defense Forces legal advisor to the Gaza Strip. So all matters of operational counterterrorism decision-making, most of those I was involved in. The second position I held that's totally relevant to this is I was the legal advisor to the Home Front Command, which would be the Israeli version of Department of Homeland Security, which addresses these kinds of internal issues. I think that in a society that is marked by mixed communities, I mean, 20% of, as I say, 20% of our population are Israeli Arabs. Yeah. To have that, I want to be so careful with my word, not threatened, not challenged, but be, at the moment marked by violence, it undermines, from my perspective, the essence of society, I mean, of civil society. We don't have to like each other. We don't have to, you know, be besties, but we absolutely have to respect each other, and we absolutely have to engage with devoid of violence. And I'm a firm believer that whether it's extremist Jews or extremist Israeli Arabs who are engaged in violence, they need to be arrested, they need to be prosecuted. because that's what society does. But the thought of citizen A attacking citizen B because they look different, because one guy is using an Israeli name, one is Yossi, the other guy is Muhammad, and attacking each other because of that, that's something that under no condition can society tolerate. I need to add, and I'm well aware of the fact that X percentage of your viewers or your listeners will very much disagree with me, but that's okay. I point the J'accuse, you know, the finger of the accused finger at Prime Minister Netanyahu, who I think has done, from his perspective, what was needed to save his government. I think he is a master inciter. I've written so. I've spoken about this, so, you know, I can cite myself. And it's easy for political purposes to rile up, you know, the masses. And in that sense, we've been through incitement before. I remind all of you that Prime Minister Rabin was assassinated in November of 1995. Netanyahu's incitement played a part in that. And here we are 26 years later, still dealing with incitement from the right wing. I don't know if this gets play in the States, but there have been weekly demonstrations every Saturday night outside the Prime Minister's home. We're very involved in that. And we've been called terrible terms by the right-wing opposition. Maybe some people who've been to Israel say, well, that's not part of Israeli society. But I say that words kill, and I mean that very seriously. And what worries me about the riots is the direct causal relationship between words and actions. One of the critical questions, perhaps on both issues, is who's going to be the adult in the building? And what really complicates this, I could go on for hours and our time is limited, is that Hamas and Netanyahu have a very bizarre, mutually beneficial, symbiotic relationship where they need each other. I know it doesn't look like that, but that's, from my perspective, the reality at the moment is they both benefit from both conflicts, unfortunately.
Professor Giora, final question. We have about a minute left, but as we watch the videos come across the news channels, I look at these rockets being fired into the sky. And can you paint a picture of what you're seeing or what it's like when these rockets are coming into Israel and the Iron Dome is protecting
sure.
and exploding?
So I was actually, I was actually last Monday when it first started. We live outside Jerusalem, so I was on a Zoom call, University of Utah related business, when the Iron Dome siren went off. And I said to the people who I was, you know, I was trying to committee, I said, well, I'll be back in a minute. And the next thing I know, the boom was very loud because the first barrage of rockets were aimed towards Jerusalem. One landed by car about 5 minutes from our house. The boom is loud. I mean, you can't not hear it. But because of the Iron Dome system, I mean, the algorithm works. That said, I mean, people have been hit. Houses have been, you know, destroyed. People have been killed. But there's no doubt that the Iron Dome is extraordinarily effective. It gives us, you know, from the moment you hear the siren, a minute to go into a safe space, or if you're driving to get, you know, lie on the ground, if you're in your home, to find a safe space in your home. All our homes have these safe rooms. You know, it's unpleasant. It's, frankly, because of Iron Dome, it's quote-unquote manageable. I'm sure that from the perspective of the American audience, the whole thought of having, I think it's now 1,500 or 2,000 rockets have been fired into Israel the past 5 days or 6 days, I think from, you know, if rockets were being fired into the United States, I can't imagine anybody would tolerate that. But again, I want to emphasize that we're facing two conflicts, one with Hamas and one internal to Israel. I think the internal one is the one that maybe is not getting the headlines in the States, but I think it's frankly the more important one.
A terrifying description, Professor Giora. Best of luck. We pray for you. And for your safety, but his description, Mary, as he said, all of our homes have safe rooms.
Yes.
And we have 1 minute from the time the Iron Dome sirens go off to get to our safe place, paints a terrifying picture from Israel. Amos Giora, thank you so much for joining us, a professor of law at the University of Utah.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.